How's it going, everybody, and welcome to episode number 54 of Master My Garden Podcast. Now, this week's episode is a solo episode, and it's covering a topic that often gets asked, and I suppose it's a response to a listener's question, and I'll read out that question in a moment, but it's essentially somebody who's considering getting into growing vegetables for the first time, and not quite sure where to start, I guess. So I'll read out the question, and then I'll get into it. Like, there's lots in it, but we won't make it too complicated because you don't want to put somebody off, and definitely vegetable growing is an easy thing to do. So long as you don't, I suppose, bog yourself down too much at the start by either getting too big or growing things that are too difficult. So, as I said, listener's question. So I'll read out the question first and then I'll get into it. Just firstly, before we start, last week's episode with Des Doyle is super, super content, really good interview with Des. My sound quality was quite poor on my side. I have moved into a new office space that I converted outside, and I had only finished decorating it, as in painting it and so on, and I had no soft furnishings in it. I had no sound absorption in the room, so my sound was quite echoey. So apologies to regular listeners who listened to that last week, because it definitely sounded a little bit echoey. Tonight now I have blankets on the floor, coats hanging up, trying to absorb the sound a little bit until I get it fully set up. But it still was okay, but the sound, just listening to it myself, I could hear that the sound was a little bit echoey. So apologies to regular listeners for that one. So, as I said, this question is from a listener. I'm not sure the person wanted to be named, so I won't call out the name. But essentially the question goes like this. We want to start growing our own vegetables, and we have a half an acre out the back, but not sure where to start. I suppose that's a regular thing. Not quite sure where to start. It's a big lawn at the moment with some trees. We're thinking of basic veg, such as potatoes, onions, carrots, peas, scallions. Then they ask, do we have to dig the area? Should we mark it out first, and so on? So it's a very, very simple question. So this person hasn't been growing any veg previously. And I suppose the key to start with, and the first thing I would always say, is start with what your family likes to eat. So it's very tempting when you look at the vegetable plants, you know, in March and April, the vegetable plants start to arrive in the garden centres, and it's very, very tempting to pick up all the different types, 10 or 12 different trays of plug plants that are broccoli and cauliflower, and then you take them home and you grow them, and it's very, as I said, tempting because it looks so simple. But if two or three or four of those are going to be ones that the family doesn't eat a lot of, or if there's four members in the family and only one person eats cauliflower, for example, well, then having a dozen cauliflowers coming on is probably not the best idea. So I would start with the vegetables that everybody in the family likes, and then from there maybe pick the easiest ones to grow as a starting point, because it's very important that on your first attempt or your first year that you don't be afraid to be adventurous, obviously, but try things that you know you can, that you're going to be successful with, because that success will bring confidence, and that confidence then will allow you to try the more difficult crops going forward. Your experience will build up and you won't get disillusioned or disheartened in your first year. And I suppose that's a starting point. So look at what it is that the family uses, and from that list then figure out which ones are actually the easiest to grow within that. And I'll get into some types now in a few minutes as well. This person has a half acre out the back, and that's a big garden. So I think the key is to mark out a small area first. And your first consideration is you're going to have vegetable beds. So are you going to go with raised beds? And a raised bed essentially is something that can be raised off the ground and then must be filled in with compost or soil or growing media of some sort. And you will grow your vegetables in that. And then an ordinary bed on the ground is a bed that's marked out, and you will basically grow your vegetables in that, but everything will be at ground level as opposed to being up high. So I suppose as a very basic starting point, the advantages of a raised bed is that you're working at a higher level. So sometimes it can be less strenuous in that you're working more at hip height, as you're doing your weeding, as you're doing your planting, your harvesting, all those jobs are at hip height. So that can be a little bit easier. The disadvantages of raised beds, I guess, is that they're a little bit more costly in that you have to buy some material or other, whether that's wood, plastic raised beds or block raised beds or whatever it is. So you have to buy some materials to raise them up. And then you have to, if you don't already have it on site, you have to buy some form of compost or soil or whatever it is to go into those beds to fill them up. The other thing with them is that they can dry out quite a bit easier. So they dry out easier than beds on the ground. Because it's raised up, you're getting a lot more sun concentration on it. So they can tend to dry out a little bit easier. Then on the flip side of that is that they can warm up quite a bit quicker, meaning that you can get sowing earlier. So there's a few advantages and disadvantages, but I would say for this person who's starting off in their first year, I would say work with beds at ground level, assuming that they're fully fit and healthy and that suits them. So work with beds at ground level. And what we would do here is mark out a bed. Typically, you're going to go for something that's 1.2 meters wide or thereabouts. And that means that basically, if you're working from either side, it's quite comfortable to reach in 600 mil, 700 mil on each side. And so for planting, for harvesting, for weeding and all those jobs. So think of marking it out 1.2 meters wide, approximately. And then your length is totally up to you. So you can go as long as you want. I would say that, a 1.2 meter bed that's maybe 2.5-3 meters long is a nice size, and then leave a little spot of grass in between that and the next bed, because beds of that size will make it easier for you when you start to factor in things like rotation. So you can, and I'll explain rotation in a moment as well, but so if you're going to be getting more successful and growing more crops, you will start to need to do rotation, and that's where a bed of a set size, and if you have all your beds at the same size, it's quite easy then to move your whole rotation around. And as I say, I'll explain that one in a moment. So that's your first choice, is whether you're going with raised beds or beds on the ground. But for this person, I would say, yes, go with beds on the ground, 1.2 meters wide and whatever length it suits. Now, the next thing the person asks is, do we have to dig it up? And I suppose the traditional method is to take off the vegetation, however you do that. And that's your choice. Your options are to scrape off the top layer of grass or whatever other means you want to remove it. I certainly wouldn't recommend spraying in a plot that you're going to use for the production of food. But essentially, you need to get the vegetation off it. And the traditional method was always to dig over that. And people would have typically dug it over sometime during the winter so that some frost would get on the dug over ground, and that would make it more easy to cultivate it in the springtime. Now, there is a massive movement away from I suppose, that type of traditional dig gardening for a number of reasons. And I think what we found out this year with the early lockdown back in March was that people had more time and they started to get into gardening. But what they realized within that is that the most scarce resource that the majority of us have in our lives, be it gardeners or not, is time. And so for that reason, there's a sort of a new system. Well, it's not new, but it has been around for the last 10 years, but it's growing in popularity, a no-dig gardening system. And that is, it's a system where essentially it is what it says on the tin. So where I said it, that person would start off by removing the vegetation. In the no-dig system, what you would do in year one is, so we're in January now, you still have time to do this, you would strim or mow the vegetation as tight to the ground as you possibly can, literally down to the clay. And you would cover the area that you've marked out as a bed down with cardboard. Now, if you're using cardboard, you're using brown cardboard, not anything with paint on it or a gloss finish on it, So just a brown cardboard box. You cover down your whole bed, with that. And then on top of that, you would put 3 to 4 inches of good quality compost. Now, not peat moss compost. We're talking about organic matter. Farmyard manure would work as well, if as long as it's well rotted. But a good quality compost from green materials is the best. And you would cover down your cardboard with 3 to 4 inches of this compost. And you will leave it. So it's January now, as I say. Ideally, you would be doing this pre sort of November, December type time. But even now, it's still okay. You would do that now. And then you would leave those beds. And the compost, the cardboard would start to break down. The compost would start to work its way through it. The earthworms would start to come up through the cardboard. And what ends up happening is that top 4, 5, 6 inches of the soil, where all your veg are going to be planted into, becomes looser, becomes, I suppose, friable, usable, in the same way that you would get from cultivating, as in digging, maybe rotivating, breaking up the soil in the sort of old style method. But for me, the big advantage in a modern day society is that system involves no digging. So no real heavy, cumbersome work that you previously had. And what you end up with, because you're using this organic matter in the top 6 inches, you end up with a really easy soil to work with. So that's the first thing. So if you get weeds, which occasionally you will do, they're going to be really easy to pull. They're not going to be deep rooted, set into the ground. So really easy to pull, just nice, gently pulling them up and discarding them of them. You're planting into loose, soft material. You're going to have nutrients in that soil. You're going to have, and this will be a big one, we've seen it over the last few years, you'll have more moisture holding capacity within that soil. So your need for water is going to be less. So all of those benefits to the no dig system. So for this person, again, moving through the stages, I would say beds on the ground, very good way to start. No dig system if you can at all. Ideally, we would have done this pre-Christmas, but now it's still okay. So heading towards the end of January, so now is still a good time to do that. And after you have your no dig bed set up, you basically leave those beds for the moment. And then you move on to your planning stage. So you have your bed. I suppose the other slight consideration to take into account now is that you may need water there at some point. So if you're able to harvest water from a shed or the house or however you want to gather your rainwater, that's a good thing to start planning for now so that you have this water to use when you need it later on in April, May, June. So as I say, another just slight consideration at the start. But once you've that done and you have your beds ready, and again, we're keeping this small now for year one because we want to build success and we don't want to become overwhelmed with what we have to do. So the next thing that we're going to do is choose the vegetables that we're going to grow. And again, I've said already that the key here is to look at what you actually use, what you use on a week-to-week basis, and then choose your seeds and so on accordingly. Now, this person says they want to grow potatoes, onions, carrots, peas, scallions or spring onions, and they're all very, very good choices. So starting with potatoes, again, for year one, there's a couple of things you could do here. I would suggest starting with salad potatoes, and salad potatoes are essentially, they're relatively quick to mature, so they're maturing in about 110 days from the time you plant them. And they can be grown even in something like, you know, a large bucket or a trough or something like that. So essentially, you're going to get a salad potato quite quickly. They are sown early. So you're going to sow them in probably March, maybe April. You're just going to watch out for late frost. That's the only thing to watch out for really with them. But because they're going to mature quite quickly, they'll be mature ahead of the blight season, so you won't have any worries with blight, and then you'll have a successful crop. And they're nice and simple to harvest. They're really quick to cook. So they're a very good starting point. Early potatoes then, you know, they're also good. So something like Sharp's Express, Home Guard, you know, those type of early varieties are good sort of first attempts at potatoes. Second earlies, then, you know, you could possibly get away with British Queens, because again, if you're in an area that's, you know, relatively good soil and so on, you should be able to have your British Queens sown. And for me, they're one of my favorite potatoes. There's nothing quite like those when they come out in June. You know, the first ones of the year, they're real floury and absolutely delicious with butter. And because they're going to be harvested early and they're going to mature early, again, you're not going to have any blight issues with them. So that they would be good options to start with as a potato. Now, main crop potatoes, absolutely grow them. There's so many varieties. You can get the ones that suit you, the ones that you prefer. It's just, in terms of this particular question, I would recommend just salad potatoes and early potatoes for the first year, and build the confidence, find out how your soil is, and then you'll be able to move on then the following year and maybe do two or three varieties, including main crops, that, you know, you can have potatoes for a longer period of time. The other ones they mention are onions. And again, onions are so simple. You can do these two ways. You can do them in onion sets. And again, for this listener, as a starter, I would say onion sets. So, you know, get something like a 250 gram pack of possibly a white onion. The most popular variety is Stuttgarter. It's a solid, good variety. There is other ones, Sturon. You could also go for mixed onions. So what you'd get in that would be, you'd get some red, some white, some sort of oval shaped, and, you know, just different varieties to change it up a little bit. But a couple of varieties, a red onion, maybe a shallot as well, and all those do it in the same way. So essentially what you're buying is you're buying a little mini bulb. You're waiting until the ground is a little bit warmer. So you're probably talking, well, different areas, different things. But in this area, for example, April time, sometime around Easter, thereabouts, you get to plant these into the open ground, and then you'll be harvesting from them probably end of July. You know, generally speaking, that's when you'll be harvesting, and you will get a good crop from them. And it's, aside from the possibility of them drying out, there's not that much will go wrong with them. So that's, again, a very, very, very good option for this person. Garlic is another one you can try as a starter. Spring garlic can be sown, and it is relatively successful, not quite as successful as autumn sowing of garlic. That is definitely the best time of the year. But for somebody, you know, starting out, again, have a try with garlic. Absolutely no problem doing that, and you will be successful with it, no issue. The other ones they mentioned are carrots. Again, carrots are relatively simple to grow. You just need a nice bit of depth here. So I would go for maybe some of the, you know, the shorter, quicker maturing ones as a starting one. And because you won't need as much depth, but for the main crop, carrots, you're going to need something like 12 inches of good loose soil, because the carrot has to grow straight down. You don't want too stony a soil. You also don't want a soil with too much organic matter. Or if there is organic matter, it needs to be sort of old, as in not fresh, because you can get forking and things like that. But again, carrots, quite easy. You could do them in a deep container either. So again, if somebody wanted to really start small, you could do it in a deep container. The other ones to mention, I suppose, carrots and parsnips. Parsnips go hand in hand. Now, parsnips are a little bit trickier. They're quite slow to germinate. So I won't say they're hard to grow, but just sometimes they're a little bit tricky to germinate. So if you sow a row, you mightn't get a strike rate across the whole row, and you might end up with gaps in it and things like that. But they're still relatively easy to grow. As I said, just watch out for that you may get a couple of gaps, but it's not a big thing. Some years they germinate better than others, and it's just something that happens with parsnips. It happens even on a commercial scale. They still would have, you know, some misses up and down in it. Other good things to grow, I always find the salad leaves a really good starting point for somebody who hasn't grown before, because they're really, really simple. But the biggest thing for me is that they give you a really quick, you know, within a few weeks, you're going to be harvesting in some cases. So the ones we're talking about here, spinach, like about 5-6 weeks, you could be taking the first baby leaves off spinach. Rocket, the same, quite quick. Some of the lettuces, there's a cut and comb lettuce, will be quite quick. And then things like radish is really quick. Like that's probably the quickest return that you'll have. And especially if you're growing with kids, you know, and you're getting them involved in the whole process, they'll love the first couple of days of being out digging something new, going on, creating a bed. But if you plant veg and they're waiting for 5 months for any sort of a return from it, the excitement will be gone out of it for them. So it's really good if you're doing it with children or involving the children in the process, that there is some form of a quick return. Now, they may not eat radishes, or they may not be looking to eat spinach or some of those things. You know the way kids are with vegetables. But at least if they're involved in the process of creating the bed, sowing the seed, and you're harvesting that and bringing it in and having a nice salad in the evening, even if they don't eat it, they'll feel a little bit of an excitement towards that, you know, a little bit of a return, a bit of pride. And, you know, for them as part of the process, I think that, you know, they would get a great boost off that, and it would create more of an interest for them. And then they might start to look at things that they might want to grow themselves. And then, you know, that feeds a whole cycle of what are we going to grow next year? So for a number of reasons, salad crops are really good. They give you a quick win. They're very good for intercropping. And again, I'll talk about some of the terminology in a minute, but they're very good for intercropping in with some slower maturing things. So they're a very good option. This listener also mentioned scallions or spring onions. And spring onions are really good. And essentially you can have spring onions for the best part of the year using kind of two varieties. Like White Lisbon is the most used variety. And it's a really, really solid performer, very, very good quality, easy to sow, germinates quite easy, doesn't need much care, very, very tasty. And then there is a winter version of it. So you have your spring, summer, autumn variety. And then there's also a winter variety. So that's a really good addition. And it's, you know, as I say, it's used in so many things. It's used in stir fries, salads, just sandwiches. It's so versatile, and I think most houses, you know, most people like spring onions. So again, a very good one to grow. Then some really easy things to add in, not strictly speaking veg, but there's the usual herbs that are kind of most are found in most, you know, store cupboards or whatever. So you have thyme, rosemary, sage. They're kind of the three main ones, I would say. And they're all perennial, so you could grow those. They could be grown in the pot or in the ground. And, you know, they're perennial, so they'll be there every year. They get stronger. And all you need to do is keep clipping it off. And if you get really good at it, you might start drying or dehydrating them and creating your own dried herbs for use during the winter time. But once they're kept clipped, they will stay producing new growth, new fresh growth that can be added to so many of your cooking. But then other herbs that could be added in. Basil is quite popular, but it's a tricky one to grow. And I certainly, for somebody starting out as their year one project, I wouldn't recommend basil in the year one. But certainly chives, parsley, very, very simple. Rosemary, thyme and sage, they're all very usable, used in lots of cooking and really easy to grow. So they'd be all good additions. So even though this person hasn't specifically mentioned herbs, as I say, most households would be using those. So they're a good addition to add in. And then I also mentioned, you know, with getting children involved. So to add in a couple of types of fruit into that setup would be a really good idea as well. Because again, as I said, they like to see a quick win. And I don't know any child that doesn't like strawberries, particularly ones that are fresh off the plant. So, and they're really simple to grow. So get some good quality strawberry plants, plant them out in March, and you'll be harvesting fruit off those in sort of June, July time. And as I say, the children will go mad for that, and it'll be an excitement for them and an enticement for them to get them involved in it. Other simple crops, you know, fruit crops, autumn fruiting, raspberries are very good. I say autumn fruiting because there's, with the summer fruiting ones, you have the cane, you have to tie up the canes and support the canes. But with the autumn ones, you don't. You just let them grow into a bush format. They will reliably fruit heavy every year. And the only thing you need to do is cut them back to the ground and just sort of, they will spread. So you just need to sort of curtail them and keep them into whatever area you want them to stay in. So a very, very good addition. But, you know, for children, if you have children involved, it's really easy. You can also add in just very good, reliable fruit trees, you know, Victoria plum, for example, and one or two of the apples are really, really good examples to add, are really good things to add in. As I say, not strictly speaking with the veg, but if you're going to be growing your own, why not add in a few fruits and just create a bit of variety? So that's kind of the simple things. And those, just following those simple types of, you know, using those simple types of vegetables, it's, I won't say it's impossible, but it's very, very difficult to not be successful with it. And I think, as I said at the start, that's hugely important, is that you are successful in year one, because that is what breeds your confidence. And trust me, when you bring in a head of lettuce, a bunch of spring onions, you know, later on when you start maybe developing a bit more, you bring in tomatoes, you bring in all these vegetables, or a head of cabbage or whatever it is, carrots, and you're having that for your family meal, there is a sense of pride in that that just really does get in on you, and it will create a bug in you that you just want to keep doing it and doing it and doing it. But that's why I say it's important, really important, to be successful in year one so that you don't get discouraged. And you know, sometimes people make it sound complicated and it can kind of put people off, but it really is simple. So like, you went back 30 years ago, every household in the country was doing it. So it's not difficult. It's just that maybe there's a gap that we haven't all been doing it all along, that it has just stopped for a little while, but I think it's getting going again. I think that's good. Just some of the terms that you'll come across as you start to look at all these things. One that I mentioned earlier is rotation. And essentially, that's a very, very simple thing. To put it into context, if you continually sow potatoes in the exact same spot, you will get build up of pests and diseases. And so in order to stop that, you just remember where, you don't remember, it's best actually to write it down, and I'll talk about that in a moment. And when I mentioned the beds at the start, this is why I was saying, if you could create beds that were 1.2 meters wide and say 2.4 meters long, and you create two or three of those beds, it's very, very easy then to work your rotation, because you would simply split the vegetables that you're growing into three different categories. Essentially, you'd have root crops as one category. You'd have brassicas, which is essentially anything that's in the cabbage family. So cauliflower, broccoli, cabbage, all of those are in the brassica family. So you group your root crops, your brassicas, and then all your other vegetables into three separate categories. In year one, in bed one, you grow your root vegetables, which includes potatoes. You grow your brassicas in bed two, and you grow your other vegetables in bed three. And then simply you switch the following year. So your root crops move to bed two, and so on. And you just keep moving. And because you keep moving, you don't get that buildup of disease. You end up with better crops. You end up with less pest and disease buildup. And it just makes things a lot easier for you. So that's a very, very simple way of explaining rotation. Now, you could get into length of rotation and other things. But to keep it simple for this person starting out, that's a simple way of doing it. Create three beds. Divide your crops into three different categories and then move them accordingly. The other terms that you will come across as you start researching it is successional zone. Again, it sounds complicated, but it's not. If you could picture, for example, if you purchased a packet of lettuce seeds and there was 50 seeds in it, and you take it home all excited and you sow your 50 lettuce seeds in four or five lines. Now, within reason, they're all going to come into maturity within kind of 10 days of each other. You might get an odd one that is a little bit slower, an odd one that's a little bit faster, but for the most part, those 50 lettuces will be ready within sort of 7 to 10 days of each other. And they won't last very long. So if you're a family of four and you eat two heads of lettuce a week, you're going to eat maybe four, six of those heads of lettuce, and then the rest of them are just going to go to waste. So successional sowing is basically, and the easiest way of doing it is to look at what you would eat in a 2 week period. So if you eat four heads of lettuce or six heads of lettuce in a 2 week period, then you would sow in a tray or into the open ground, you would sow six or maybe eight for a little bit of comfort in case you have, you know, some bird damage or something like that. You would sow a little bit, tiny bit more than you need, but not much. And then you would sow that every kind of 2 weeks. So this is where your diary and your planner will come in. So if, for example, we're going to successionally sow lettuce, spinach, spring onions, radish, you know, a few crops like that, you write all them, write down the dates that you start, and then you know that in 2 weeks' time you need to sow a small bit of each of them again. And that sounds like a lot of work, but it's not. And it really will be worth your while because, as I say, if you get 24 heads of lettuce all mature at the same time and you're just not going to use them, it's disheartening then to see them going to waste or ending up on the compost heap or whatever. So you're going out and you're doing a little job of sowing a few seeds every 2 weeks to ensure that your supply is fresh, and you really will. Now, occasionally what happens, you get weather, you know, weather that you get a little bit of a dry spell or a cold snap or whatever it is, and you might end up with two batches kind of coming in together, but don't worry about that. That happens, and that happens to everybody. But if you're able to sow and plan out your succession over the summertime, you'll have fresh vegetables coming all the time, and that really will be satisfying. And again, it will build your confidence, and it's, you know, it's a really simple thing, but it sounds, if you're listening to somebody talking about successional sowing, it kind of sounds daunting, but don't be daunted by it. It's literally as simple as that to ensure that you don't have too much at once. Having too little at any stage is probably not a big problem. But if you end up, as I say, with a load of heads of lettuce coming in at the same time and then you're not getting to eat them, that's a little bit disheartening. The other term that I mentioned earlier, and you will come across it when you start, you know, start researching it a bit more, is intercropping or catch crops. And again, really what this is, again, it's really simple. So when you start talking about different vegetables, some of them have really long maturity, like, for example, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, for example, purple sprout and broccoli, crops like that, you're spacing them out quite wide in the beds, and they're also really slow to mature. So what you're going to do here is you're going to sow your rows of Brussels sprouts, but in between it, you're going to put what they call a catch crop, or intercropping it with something like that's really fast maturing, like your radish, like your spinach, like your lettuce. So before the Brussels sprouts get to grow very big, you'll have taken a row of radishes from there and used it. So you're utilizing that space while you're waiting for the leaves to fill out on the Brussels sprouts or whatever. So again, it's just another term that's used, and it's a really, again, not a big thing, nothing to get too bogged down on, but something that's well worth doing, especially because some of those brassicas take up a lot of space. You need to give them, you know, maybe 600 or 2 feet wide between the rows, you know, and that's taking up a lot of your bed space. So just to get in and get a quick intercrop out of it, it really, really helps. And it keeps the bed sort of with plant cover on it, which is always a good thing. The less bare soil that you have, the better. The other thing that's worth doing, and this is, again, not to complicate things, but this person is starting in a garden, which at the moment is just a lawn with a few trees in it. So there's not much going on in terms of, biodiversity in that area. So it would be a good thing to, even into a couple of corners of these beds, to add in certain flowers, things like calendulas and, you know, that type of thing. Because if you can picture it, if you have this half acre garden and you land in four lovely veg beds into it, and then you start filling it full of lovely juicy lettuce and, you know, other things that the likes of greenfly will like, they're going to swarm in there because there's nothing else in the area for them. So if you're providing them with this beautiful lettuce that's growing well and juicy and all the rest of it, the aphids are going to come in, or the greenfly is going to come in. So that's natural. Again, that's not to put anybody off and it's not to discourage people. This will happen. And the way to combat it is to try and build up the sort of biodiversity in the garden that the bugs don't see your lettuce as the one and only thing that they want to eat in the garden. So this is why I'm saying you've got to add in things like conundulas. The aphids will get attracted to that and they'll eat that as opposed to eating your lettuce. Now that will take time. That might not necessarily happen in year one, but you're going to build up a level of biodiversity in your garden through adding in, you know, other things like flowers and herbs, and the biodiversity will build up and you'll get a natural balance. And eventually it'll come to the point where you're able to grow your salad crops, get in and out with a really quick crop without having any damage from pests or anything like that. The final thing I would say for this person, and actually for anybody who's growing veg, a really worthwhile investment is a thing called BioNet, or it goes under EnviroMesh. And essentially what that is, it's a really fine, heavy-duty mesh that goes over your crops. And you can do it really simply by getting a piece of wire and making a hoop across the bed and covering it down with this BioNet. Now, this does a few things. So it doesn't give you any frost protection per se, but what it does, particularly in the early part, you know, if you start planting out in March, April, you can still get those kind of cold winds. You can still get that heavy downpours. And the BioNet just breaks that a little bit. It makes it less harsh on it. Then it's also the right size, the mesh is the right size to not allow things like the carrot root fly through. So again, it's another thing that carrots get, and the BioNet would stop that. And so, as I say, it's a heavy duty material. So essentially you'd buy this once, and if you're minding it, and so long as it doesn't blow away in the wind, you will have that for years upon years. I think most people will be getting 7, 8, 9 years out of BioNet if they're minding it. And that, as I say, will make the conditions under the net just a little bit softer especially on the young seedlings as they come through. It'll also keep things like, again, if you create a new bed and you start planting in veg, it'll look interesting for birds to go rooting in it, to go pulling them up. Pigeons could go for it, things like that. So this BioNet allows the rain through, allows air movement through, so you don't get any buildup of molds or anything like that. But it softens the environment inside and it really makes it easier for people to grow. So I hope that answers the question. As I say, the really important points are to start small, start manageable, to get as much out of it with as little work as possible. And I don't mean that from a lazy point of view. I mean that from the point of view of you want to be able to manage the area. You want to be able to harvest your crops without any waste, without you being under too much pressure to keep on top of it. So that's why I recommend a no-dig system, and to stick with simple crops for year one. And then as you get more experienced and you develop your gardening skills, the rest of it will all start to come. And I'd say eventually you'll be growing every type of veg that you can find, and you'll probably add on a glasshouse or a greenhouse and you'll grow tomatoes and all those things. But that will come very, very quickly once you get successful in year one. So keep it simple. Don't be afraid to try things, but yeah, definitely give it a go. And I really think that it's a great thing to, as I say, the pride you'll get from bringing in food and having it, you know, your own food, and having it for a tea or a dinner or whatever it is. There is no feeling like that. And I think anybody who's already doing it will attest to that. I have my own seed list in front of me here, and I was only looking at it before I started recording, and I could well have bitten off more than I can chew, despite what I've just said. So to kind of give you an idea of what I'll be growing this year, and as I said, I will be starting to do a little bit of video work, and you know, I'll start to show how I sow all these type things. But to give you an idea of what seeds I'm going to be sowing, so I have beetroot, a couple of types. I have chard. I've never grown chard before, but the one I've got is really bright, really bright stems, and I'm actually going to use it, obviously, as a food, but I'm going to use it a little bit ornamentally as well, just see how that looks mixed through, you know, perennial borders and things like that. So that's interesting. I have a couple of purple sprouting broccolis. Now, they're not a crop you'd start in your first year, because they'll be sowed later on in this year, and then they won't fully mature until next spring. So that's sort of a long-term thing. So as I say, you want to get quick success in year one. I have Brussels sprouts, just a single type. A couple of cabbages, greyhound, which is always a really nice pointed cabbage. I have broccoli, a couple of types of carrots, the sugar snacks, which is, remember I said earlier about the quick maturing variety, that's one of those. And then I also have some of the later ones, so Autumn King. And I have a cauliflower, celery, which I'm going to grow for the first time. Well, I have grown it in work about 20 years ago, but I've never grown it here. So interested to try that. Now, celery is quite a difficult one, so I'll look that up a bit more and see. Grown chicory, that's, again, I haven't grown chicory before. Dwarf French beans, that's a really good one to start with, actually. Dwarf French beans, so they don't need any support. They grow in a little bush, and so long as you're able to keep pulling the French beans as they come ready, they will keep producing for a good while. So a really, really good one. Yeah, definitely a good one to start with. I have a couple of herbs as well. I have chives, coriander, sage, thyme. I have kale, leeks. Leeks is a good one. A little bit slower, so maybe not one that you'd recommend for somebody in the first year, but it's something that lasts very well. So where I was saying about, you know, lettuce coming and not lasting very long, like leeks will stand for a long time in the ground. So yeah, that's a real good one. Then I have spring onions. I have, as I mentioned earlier, the white Lisbon, both the winter hardy one for sowing later on the year, and the spring summer one. I have rocket. I have parsnips. Just one type of peppers. I've never grown peppers before, but I have the tunnel ready now, so I'll be growing peppers. Radishes, spinach, pumpkin, again, growing that for the first time. That's kind of just something that's, I don't know, will we eat it, to be honest, but it's something that's a bit of fun to do with the two girls here, and then hopefully we'll have pumpkins for our Halloween next year. And then courgettes, sweet corn, turnips, tomatoes, and then I got some flowers again. I was saying about mixing in the conundrums and things like that, so I have some of those that just to mix in sort of into the edges of vegetable beds and so on. So that's, as I say, reading that list beforehand, I've possibly bitten off more than I can chew, despite what I've just said. But look, we don't have to sort them all anyway, but we'll see how we go. As I say, I have quite a big tunnel ready to go, and you know, there's where I am here. While if you read the back of packets of seed, and I think that's another good tip, maybe one that we'll finish on, is that, you know, it says for a lot of them, a lot of these are produced and packaged in the UK, and they have sow from, and in a lot of cases it will say from February, March. And that may well be true, because in parts of the UK where the seed is packaged up, you would get, you know, very, you know, down the south of England there, you get quite warm temperatures early. But certainly for me here, I'm on a heavy, quite damp clay soil in the Midlands, 1,000 foot above sea level. So for me, if I was to read the back of that packet and it says February, March, that just doesn't work for me here. So that's something that you will kind of learn over time as well. But for me here, if it says February, March, realistically, we can't sow here until March, April, maybe even April only. That's, you know, that's how cold it is here. And it takes that length for the soil to heat up. And while you might think you're doing good, you know, or getting ahead of yourself or getting an early crop by getting out and sowing early, for me here, that just doesn't work because the soil is too cold. And actually, for a lot of people, that is the case. So that's not something I know the answer to in relation to this garden, because I don't know where it is. But it's important that in your own garden, you recognize that. And not, okay, it's very exciting when spring comes around to get out and get sowing, but just it might be more beneficial to just sit back for a few weeks and, you know, wait until the soil temperatures are warmed up enough to get going. And you'll find that you'll be more successful. And those early ones that you get in actually may not come to maturity any quicker, because they might just sit there and do nothing until the temperatures are warm enough. So it's just something to consider. So I hope that answers the question. We went into quite a bit of detail. It's not complicated at all, and it really is something exciting for somebody to be doing. I think more of us should be doing it, and there is, but definitely over the last 12 months, we've seen a big move back towards gardening and a big move back towards grow your own. And I really do think that's something that's going to be here to stay. But the key is, as I said a couple of times already, the key is to just make sure you're successful in year one by starting small, starting with the easy varieties. And once you get that feeling of pride of having produced something that you know has made its way into your kitchen, I think that then will spur you on to doing lots more. So for this listener, thanks very much for the question, and I hope I've answered it. Hope I've answered it enough for you. And for any other listeners, if there's anything you'd like me to cover in a future episode, just let me know. You can drop me an email on info@mastermygarden.com. There's a couple of really interesting episodes coming up that are specifically on, you know, listeners' questions. I'm working on one on no-dig gardening. I touched on it a little bit there today, but hope to elaborate on that quite a bit more. And there's a few other ones coming in, again, all listeners' questions. So please do send me any questions that you want answered in the podcast. And you can follow me on the social channels. I have Facebook, Master My Garden, and Instagram at Master My Garden. So that's been this week's episode. Thanks for listening, and until next time, happy gardening.